Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
When the next generation asks us, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you speak up? What are we going to say? Mr. President, I rise today to say, enough. The personal attacks, the threats against principles, freedoms and institution, the flagrant disregard for truth and decency, the reckless provocations, most often for the pettiest and most personal reasons, reasons having nothing whatsoever to do with the fortunes of the people that we have been elected to serve.
He was against me from before he ever knew me. He wrote a book about me before I ever met him, before I ever heard his name. His poll numbers in Arizona are so low that he couldn't win. And I don't blame him for leaving. I think he did the right thing for himself.
Well, I think Kelly Ward's chances just got a lot more difficult. I think she still is a credible contender for the nomination, in part based on running before and having people who have voted for her for the Senate. But now I think she's going to get at least one or more challengers in the primary who don't have the specific baggage that the senator had.
And joining us to talk about Senator Jeff Flake's decision not to run for re-election are former state legislative leader Chad Campbell, currently with Strategies 360, and former lawmaker and former Board of Regents Chair Greg Patterson, also known as the Espresso Pundit. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Greg, let's boil it down to this. Is Jeff Flake not running for re-election out of principle, in part, in whole, or because he thought maybe he couldn't be Kelly Ward or Kyrsten Sinema?
Oh, I think it's both. I think that he would have to completely reinvent himself in an attempt to win in this environment, and he's just not willing to do that. So it is a recognition that the current Jeff Flake is unelectable and that he's not willing to become the new Jeff Flake and completely change positions. And you have to give him a lot of kudos for that. Many politicians in his situation would completely reinvent themselves and abandon old positions and just try to stay in office, and he certainly didn't do that.
And some would say Senator McCain did that on multiple occasions.
Sure, he's changed on some key issues. He's evolved over the years. I think the better example would be Hillary Clinton, who negotiated the Trans-Pacific Partnership and then rejected it. And so that's a more salient example. Both parties used to think that free trade, for example, was good, that globalization was good. And the country has abandoned that position, and Jeff Flake has not, and other folks did. And Hillary is the best example of that.
And Chad, about Senator Flake, why do you think he's really not running?
Yeah, I mean, I think to Greg's point, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that he probably looked at the numbers and he had a primary that I honestly think he probably could have won the primary, but I think it would have been a scathing, brutal battle. And to his points he made in his speech, with Bannon kind of taking over the GOP base now, that would have been one of the ugliest primaries I think you would have seen in Arizona history and probably in the country for next year. And I think he probably didn't want that. And then if he would have made it through the primary, he had a very tough road ahead of him against Kyrsten Sinema, obviously. So I think that's one half of the equation. And then I also think he meant what he said. And I think that a lot of people have lost sight of what he said and were focused on the fact that he's not going to run again and the political implications. But to me, what's more important is what he said about our president. And if that's true, then to his point, we have a serious problem in our country and a serious problem with this very angry GOP base that he keeps talking about.
Hey, Greg, I want to ask you something about that you kind of alluded to, which is that Jeff Flake kind of felt himself a little bit outside of the mainstream of the GOP. And this is somebody who's a pretty conservative lawmaker, pretty conservative political person. What does it say about the Republican Party if somebody like that doesn't really fit within the mainstream of the party anymore?
Well, the temptation is to think that the party has moved further right and that he's somehow a moderate, but that's really not true. What has happened is that the base of the party has become populist, and the Republican Party was not a populist party. And so nationalism and populism are not conservative Republican principles. Frankly, they're not Democratic principles either, which is why the mainstream of both parties has found alternatives. And in Hillary's case, it was Bernie Sanders, and in the Republicans' case, it was Trump. And the whole country has shifted to a populist direction that is completely anathema to what Republicans believe and, frankly, what Democrats believe for the last 20 years.
Do you think that was a slow shift, or did it just happen with the 2016 campaigns?
I think it's a great example of an earthquake. It's a tectonic shift where pressure was building over years and years, and then something snapped it, and then it just went, and then Trump managed to really tap into it. And he tapped into it very well. Unfortunately, populist sentiment, as we see in, you know, you just did a segment on Venezuela. It's easy to get populist sentiment, and it's the nationalism and populism goes badly in the long run. But the sophisticated argument that actually globalization and free trade are really benefiting a lot of people, et cetera, and that this country does a lot of exports, which has been made by both parties over the last 20 years, doesn't resonate. It certainly doesn't resonate with people who are unemployed and whose father used to work at Xerox for 30 years or worked at Motorola or someplace like that, actually produced something, and then they're finding themselves work at Starbucks. That's very difficult for a lot of people.
Well, and I would even take it one step further in terms of the populist element of the GOP, which I agree with. But it's also it's a particular brand of populism, and a lot of that is nativism. There's a lot of nativist undercurrent to this. And again, not to keep referencing Steve Bannon, but Steve Bannon is the architect of this, and he's tapped into, I think, something that's been missed by more of the mainstream Republicans and Democrats for a long time, is this anger and this identity politics that, quite frankly, the far right and Trump has played magnificently. But also, I mean, I'm not going to just say there's some identity politics issues on the left as well that I think have fed into this Trump machine, to be honest with you. So it's kind of enough, you know, quote unquote, blame to go around. But, you know, when you see the fact that Steve Bannon, you have to kind of kiss the ring. I saw something this morning that says Jay Heiler, who's thinking about running for the flake seat, had to meet with Bannon now. Mm. That's interesting to me. So does Bannon now, does the pathway to mainstream support, quote unquote, in the GOP primary now go through Bannon? And if that's the case, if you look at the history of Steve Bannon and what he stands for against globalization, some of his rhetoric around nativism, I mean, that's a very scary thought for a lot of America, I think.
And do we have to completely rethink then what we think of Kelly Ward and who Kelly Ward is? Because, yes, she ran against Senator McCain and got a pretty high percentage considering what her name recognition was and considering what Senator McCain's was. But she is someone who technically, at least temporarily, is the front runner in this. So, Chad, do you see her changing at all because she is the front runner, or is this who she is, and again, with the Bannon support?
I think Kelly Ward's incapable of changing. It's to her chances, I think this is probably the worst thing to happen to her in some ways. Because Flake was her foil. He was kind of her scapegoat. And now you're going to be able to focus on what she believes and what she's worked on over the years. And chemtrails is just the tip of the iceberg when you talk about Kelly's views on conspiracy theories and other policy issues. So I think that's a big problem for her. But I don't think she can change. I think Kelly Ward will keep running to the right. I don't even like to use that term because I'm not even sure it's to the right. To whatever that element is, she's going to keep playing to that base.
Hey, great talk about that. What do you think about Kelly Ward as the person running against Senator McCain as opposed to the person who is now a front runner for a Senate race?
Well, she's the front runner because nobody else is in it. She had the ability to get some points because she was the person who was running against the person who was in office. And so if you were going to vote no on McCain, you ended up voting yes on Kelly Ward. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to vote no on McCain, even though he's going to win his race. You know, he's won his race as handily as he does for just about all of them. He's consistently been underestimated. So as the alternative vote, that just doesn't happen for her anymore. You're going to get grown-ups in there, and they're going to run the race, and she's going to be the alternative votes, the protest vote for some of those grown-ups, but she's still going to be the protest vote.
Are there people, do you think that the people who might enter that race on the Republican side, do you think that the Steve Bannons or whoever is looking to sort of win this race and figure out who the candidate's going to be, are they looking for somebody who is going to be sort of a mainstream Republican conservative candidate? Or do you think they might want somebody who can be that and also pick off some of the folks who might have voted either for Ward or against Flake?
Well, I think that it is always interesting. We come up with a boogeyman, whether it's Steve Bannon or it's the Koch brothers or it's Alec. I mean, you know, that's a conspiracy theory as well, that there are all these deep forces behind here that have all this control of the narrative and what's going on, and they choose the candidates and the kingmakers, and before that it was Karl Rove, et cetera, and then it was Newt Gingrich before that, et cetera. That's right up there with the trail of bodies left by the Clintons. I really don't think that there's this cabal of people who just run what's going on. There's a lot of people who have an outsized influence because they control a lot of media, and that media feeds into what people believe, but they're not kingmakers. And so I think what you're going to see is you're going to see mainstream conservative Republicans who are generally well-respected in Republican circles. I don't know who they're going to be. You're probably going to see the Schweikert, of course, is a key example who's been mentioned a lot.
And that's someone you know pretty well.
I know Schweikert well, and he outpolled Trump by 10 points in his district. You're going to see probably a McSally. You might see a Gosar. You're going to see people like Jay Heiler, whom I also know and respect tremendously. You're going to see traditional Republicans who've been around a long time and who have espoused Republican principles and who are genuinely decent people who aren't going to have a lot of this rhetoric that you've seen, or who you don't know them by their Twitter accounts. And I think you're going to see them step in and do well.
Chad, how should Kyrsten Sinema feel about all these developments?
Well, I think for Congresswoman Sinema, a lot of it depends on who comes out of the primary, obviously. And I think that until we know that field, that remains to be unseen or unknown, I should say. Sorry. You know, I think that if you look at somebody like a Martha McSally, she was probably the biggest threat, I think, in the general election, if you look at it from a perspective of Kyrsten Sinema. I think the others probably don't represent more of a threat than Jeff Flake would have represented in many ways in the general election. So, you know, I've known Kyrsten Sinema for going on 20 years. I served with her in the legislature, and people keep asking me, do you think she was prepared for this? Did this surprise her? And I know her team. And I can guarantee you that they game this out every possible scenario when they looked at this. And this probably wasn't something that they necessarily maybe wanted because it's an unknown element. But I can guarantee you they were prepared for it, and she's ready for it, and she's ready for a general election no matter what.
Given the political environment in which we're in, do you think that it's possible, you know, we in the media and political pundits often throw out the names of established politicians as potential candidates. Is this the kind of race where we might get somebody who sort of, I don't want to call them a wild card, but maybe somebody a little less known to the political world, somebody maybe from business or from some other field, someone maybe like a Donald Trump who wasn't involved specifically as a candidate before?
Mark, I think you mean Buzz Mills.
Yeah, there you go, exactly.
Well said. Absolutely. You could certainly do that. Ducey would be an example of somebody who came in and paid some dues by becoming treasurer and doing it a two-step process. Symington, of course, is someone who did that. The problem that traditional Republicans are going to have at the moment is the same problem that traditional Democrats are going to have at the moment, which is that many of the economic positions that they have espoused over the last 15 or 20 years are no longer positions that are tenable for a good chunk of the electorate. And so you can switch from free trade, from globalism, et cetera, and talk about, you know, unwinding NAFTA, et cetera. But, you know, NAFTA was bipartisan, and it was Clinton who signed it, and it was Jim Colby who ended up doing a lot of the negotiations on it. And so those are bipartisan significant events that when folks ignore their base and go to Washington and try to really get something done, those are examples of what they do. But the people who have espoused those over the years can't get elected if they emphasize that. They don't necessarily have to go against it. Flake had some issues in that he also wanted to open up Cuba. He was part of the immigration Gang of Eight, et cetera. So he had really gone against the party base on a lot of key issues and had taken on the president. And so I think you'll see Republicans who haven't quite done that who will do well.
Chad, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit tougher of an environment for that to happen for all the reasons Greg mentioned. And I think just from a fiscal perspective, I mean, somebody that were to jump in this race at this time would probably have to be able to self-fund to some degree if they were an outsider. I think you have, you know, on both sides, you have the forces on both sides kind of aligned with certain pots of money that are going to be committed to one type of candidate or another. And so if you're the outside businessman or businesswoman looking to jump in from the Republican side of the field, you're probably going to have access to some money either in your own pockets or somebody really closely aligned with you that can fund a lot of your campaign.
That's Chad Campbell. Also here is Greg Patterson. We are in the midst of the Friday newscap here on the show on KJZZ. More of the conversation right after this. Happy Friday morning. It is the show on KJZZ, and we're in the midst of our Friday newscast segment with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Also here, Chad Campbell, currently with Strategies 360, is also a former state legislative leader and former lawmaker and former Board of Regents chair. Greg Patterson is also here. Greg, I want to ask kind of an odd question when it comes to Jeff Flake, but and in the special edition of the Jeff Flake Show here on KJZZ. He talked a lot about principles, and it's hard to these days, especially to ascribe courage to a politician. And yet he seems like someone who, at least in this sense, cared more about principles than reelection, maybe even though we discussed that it's maybe affected by both. Do you think there will be some sort of coattails for Jeff Flake? Or do you think when people like Jeff Flake, Bob Corker are out, we're going to see less civility in the Senate? Or could it lead to actually more civility?
Oh, I think we're going to end up with significantly less, civility in the Senate. It is still a deliberative body. Trump wants to get rid of the filibuster. Jeff Flake wants to keep the filibuster. You're going to see a lot of people who do politics by any means they can to get things done. And the Democrats have certainly done that. The Republicans have certainly done that. Both tend to blame the others. Jeff Flake, in his book, talked about how civility has gone away from both sides of the aisle. And so, sure, I think that you're going to gradually see an escalation in serious hardball politics. And it's an extension of what you've seen from the Bork hearings on. And so for the last 30 years, we've seen that. And we will see more of it.
Chad, are we heading for a perfect storm on this, though, where it sort of explodes and then we go back to something, or no? You as someone who worked across the aisle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that ideally that's kind of the case. We get to a critical point and maybe we all hit the reset button. I don't know. But I am with Greg. I don't think this is going to change anytime soon. I hate to sound like the pessimistic person on the show this morning, but I think things are going to get much worse before they get better. And I think it's going to come down, at some point it's going to come down to whether or not people are getting anything from their government, be it Senate, House, President, whatever. You can only talk a good game for so long, and this goes for both sides of the aisle, and not deliver. And quite frankly, nothing has been happening in D.C. in a bipartisan manner for many, many years now. And that's a problem for the country. And so I do hope that at some point, even though we may go through another couple of years of really bad rhetoric and some really, kind of bare-knuckle brawling down there, so to speak, that we'll come out of this better off at the end of the day and maybe respecting the institution a bit more than what's happening right now.
What do either of you think it would take to get to that point? I mean, as Greg said earlier, this is sort of a volcanic eruption that, was resulted from years and years of bubbling under. What's going to cause things to get better?
I think people need to shut down their Twitter accounts. you're seeing people think that Washington is where the civility or incivility started, but it isn't. It was from talk radio to cable TV to Twitter to Facebook, et cetera. It's been the overall environment, and then the political community has actually lagged on that. They're much more civil than people think. They get along much better. People are surprised that Matt Salmon and Kyrsten Sinema are friends, and their base doesn't really understand that. But it wasn't that long ago that Steve Benson drew a picture of Jan Brewer as Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, it's difficult to overcome an environment like that. People see that and they emulate that. And if you take a look at the reporters from The Republic or from Channel 12 or whomever, and you see the work that they have in the paper or on TV, it's one separate work product. If you follow them on Twitter, it's completely different. And the tone is awful. And so you're seeing this social media circle of hate, and it has people who follow it, and it completely changes the tone of what they do. And the folks like Jeff Flake, who can't really accommodate their own base on that type of tactic or rhetoric, are the people who have principle, and then they don't continue in the game. And I think you'll see that on both sides, but it is definitely Washington lagging what we see in the political and journalistic community.
And I would add to this, I mean, I hear it from people all the time. They complain about the environment in D.C. They complain about the environment at the state capitol, whatever it may be. But the politicians who are in office are acting like that because that actually gets them support. So they wouldn't be doing this if they weren't getting continually reelected. And there's not some disconnect between them and their base. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. And so I think, to Greg's point, the people have to kind of take a reflection on their own actions and their own activity, who they're voting for, and start to figure out what they want. But my bigger fear about this, and I think, you know, I think Senator Flake touched on it a bit in his speech, is this new element that's kind of undermining the belief in institutions that have been, you know, the foundation of our country since the beginning. That's a bigger problem for me. This continual questioning of the free press is a problem for me. And that's not a partisan issue to me. If there was a Democratic president doing this to the degree that Trump is, I would be very, very concerned as well. And all politicians do this to a degree. Let's not kid ourselves. I've just never seen it to this scale. And I think that you're sowing the seeds of mistrust in voters across the board, and they have nobody to believe except people that already talk in the language they can understand on Twitter or Facebook or whatever it may be. And that's a vicious cycle we're getting stuck in.
We've just a couple minutes left, so let's move to something a little bit closer to the state capitol. That is the investigation from the state attorney general's office that was released this week showing that in the run-up to last year's special election in the spring for Propositions 123 and 124, the Secretary of State's office did in fact break the law by not sending the publicity pamphlets out in time, but no criminal violations took place and nobody was penalized or no penalties for employees or the secretary there. Greg, what do you make of what that investigation found and sort of how that whole incident was handled?
Well, it was a high level of incompetence, unfortunately. I think that we can say the law was broken, certainly, and because there was a statutory deadline and it absolutely was not met, and that was just a phenomenal series of mistakes within that office. The reason that the law wasn't broken in the traditional sense that this is criminal is that it wasn't intentional. It was clearly a mistake. They were trying to fix it as quickly as they could as they went, and it was Keystone Cops as they were doing it. There's no question about that. But it's pretty clear that it wasn't knowingly doing that. It wasn't intentionally doing it. They weren't trying to do something. They simply had a really complex list of folks and couldn't get that list together.
Chad, briefly.
Well, and I would, from the political side of things, and I say this, I like Michelle Regan. I served with her on a personal level. Her and I get along very well. But the fact that she found out about this whole problem by listening to the media and her staff didn't tell her, the reaction internally and the way they've handled this and the fact that nobody's been held accountable in that office is astonishing to me. And if I were her, I would be very, very afraid about my upcoming election next year.
That's former state legislative leader Chad Campbell, currently with Strategies 360. Also here was former lawmaker and former Board of Regents chair Greg Patterson. Guys, thanks for joining us on the NewsCap today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.